Here we are again. Sunday morning, when we come together voluntarily to renew our minds, to feed our spirits, and to open ourselves to a place of transformation by which we can change the world. Let us make this place and this time sacred by bringing our full hearts, our full minds, and our full spirits to this place with love for each other and for the world. It's at this point in the center of our service here that we invite you to become centered yourselves, to join us either in a moment of silence and reflection and prayer or meditation, to light candles placed here by the windows of hope, of regret or sorrow, of anticipation for a better day or celebration of this one. Please join us in this time in a period of reflection and prayer by remaining where you are in your center or in lighting candles as the music continues. Please join me in spirit of prayer and meditation. What is it that we could say but thank you? For waking up to a day filled with sunshine, waking up with our hearts beating, our breath breathing in songs into the world. What is it we could say but thank you for a place like this, which gives us permission to be hopeful? Our lives have not and will not be perfect. We come into a place like this, hoping that we can reclaim some better part of ourselves and take it into our next days. What could we pray? We can't pray for magic. We could pray that in the midst of our struggles we have courage, that in the midst of injustice we see light, that when rain falls we gather our songs. May our hearts and minds be open to all that is, all the love that is possible in this world. And may we find what is sacred when it's least expected. Amen. In January of this year, I was absolutely astounded to find out that on this planet, a human language dies every 14 days. On the radio program I was listening to, the correspondent said that by the end of this century alone, half of the world's nearly 7,000 languages will be extinct. But one of those languages is going to have a little bit that somebody can remember. Before she herself died, the last fluent speaker of the Alaskan Eyak language, Chief Marie Smith Jones, worked with researchers to create a dictionary and some kind of formalized grammar for her language. So at least a little bit of her story and her culture will live on. There is another dying language, however, that's going to face a different set of challenges. Here's a quote from NPR's Morning Edition from last November. Two brothers in Mexico have had a falling out. They aren't speaking, and that has linguists worried. It might have remained a family feud, but these brothers are the last two speakers of the local Zoque language. Experts at the Mexican Institute for Indigenous Religious Languages fear that this version of Zoque will die if the brothers don't start speaking. No details on what exactly drove them apart. Now, while the English that I'm using right now is certainly in no immediate danger of extinction, I think that each and every one of us in this room faces a similar situation to the people I just mentioned. Each of our communities and each of our lives has such a unique experience of the world and something so unique to offer. And when we pass, some of that will pass with us. What stays is up to us. How is it that we can translate the language of our lives into something that stays? When I was in seminary, there was a very commonly spread rumor that every preacher really only has one sermon in them. And they give this sermon over and over and over again, just using some different words to say what they're trying to say. Now, what this is supposed to mean is that hopefully at the heart of everybody's ministry, there's something so profound and so moving for them that everything they do is basically a variation on the same theme. Now, I'll leave it up to you to decide if this is the case for your current minister, but at this point, I can tell you that it's very accurate for me. One night, some members of my ministerial study and support group were sitting around a table drinking coffee, and we were talking about what it is our one sermon might be. My friend Julia offered hers to us, and I swear to you, I will never forget it. Julia said that in all of her ministry and preaching, one theme shows up every time: that life is weirder, harder, and better than you thought it would be. In my experience, Julia is right on. Now, when it came to my own, I was not surprised at all that as someone with a theater degree, mine ended up being the title of a musical. I love you. You're perfect. Now change. So I find that this theme that's running through a lot of my ministry is actually, for me, a reflection of what our UU heritage is. Our Unitarian and Universalist ancestors passed down some theological notions to us that says every single part of creation participates in what is sacred. There are no saved and damned in this world. But that doesn't mean it's going to be easy to fulfill your spiritual journey or to make justice in this world. It's certainly not possible to sum up a human life in one sentence or a summer. And I have to tell you that when I was starting to write this sermon for the first one as your summer minister, I came across a bit of writer's block. This one question kind of kept creeping up under me and under me, saying, what is it that you have to say to this big place? What is it that you have to offer to this historic and vibrant and growing community of faith? Well, I can tell you, I certainly don't have any wisdom to impart to you that you don't already have. But I thought that what I could do is start off this summer by asking some questions. Same questions I was asking myself. Why does this place exist? If this church disappears tomorrow morning, what language is going to be lost with it? What is the language of your life saying to the world? And what do you want it to say? We're living in a time where advertisers are constantly telling us that we're supposed to be expressing ourselves, right? But they want me to express myself through my cell phone plan or my MySpace page or the car I'm driving, the music I'm listening to, the clothes I'm wearing. I was lucky enough to sit in with a young adult group here at church this week, and a theme that ran through what they were saying over and over again was that constantly being sold something is not the fullest expression of who we are as human beings. This religious tradition that we're sitting in affirms that the great story of the world, all of the world's religious wisdom, is not complete without you. So what will you say? I know for me, it's often really hard to find that answer, or even to say it when I think I have some idea of what it might be. As romantic as I'd like to present myself, I do not spend the majority of my time thinking profound thoughts or acting like anything that's close to a saint. Far from it. A great deal of the time, I'm worried that I can't make any difference on this planet as just one person. As just this one person. I can only speak for myself, of course. I know there's so much that keeps me from offering who I really am to this world. In this culture, I feel like I'm told that I'm too busy to make a difference. That I'm supposed to have these bills and family and house and all these worries that are going to make me just too busy to offer a prophetic message to the world. I wonder if anybody else in this room has felt lately like it's a little embarrassing to be hopeful in this society. I feel like it's almost easier for me to get up in front of a group of strangers or even my family and friends and talk about how pessimistic I am about the future, to rail on about all the bad things in my life. It's like it's easier to get up and show off some scar from where I got hurt than it is to stand up and say how much I love and trust this world. I think the good news for us, at least, is that we're not the first people who have ever dealt with situations like this. In the Hebrew Scriptures, at least, the author of the book of Ecclesiastes starts off by talking about the human condition. The first line of his book goes like this: everything is meaningless. Completely meaningless. I'm glad to see this isn't just the postmodern condition. The more traditional translation of this passage makes me think that this guy could have been living in 2008. Vanity of vanities, he says. All is vanity. I say he because as a court author of the time, he was most probably a man, though maybe not. What is the use of this life, he asks. He looks into gaining wealth or friends or wisdom or joy. And he sees that in the end of a human life, we really all share the same fate and have no idea what's waiting for us. He looks with his own two eyes and sees that the sun shines and the rain falls on the unjust people and the just people just the same. And in one of the passages where I think he struggles most, he says this: history just repeats itself. It's all been done before. Nothing under the sun is truly new. We don't remember what happened in the past, and in future generations, they won't remember what we're doing now. Well, I can tell you that in my life, I've definitely been frustrated enough lately to feel like that. Anybody else? In the midst of all this, though, in the midst of all this, I'm happy to know that what we do and say and think and be in this world does make a difference. When our congregations came together to develop the principles of Unitarian Universalism, one thing we included was that we affirm an interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. A little wordy and vague, I know, but for me, what this says is something clear about the nature of reality. Every single part of existence relates to another. Everything makes a difference. What our religious tradition affirms and what science is teaching us is that what we do, what the language of our lives does in this world, will matter to someone. In his book, Thank God for Evolution, the Reverend Michael Dowd says that in the evolution of species, we know that one animal looks or acts the way it does for the most part because of what its ancestors did. So, the rhinoceros has got thick skin and horns because its ancestors chose to stick around and fight. The antelope is fast and thin because its ancestors figured out how to flee. What will our descendants look like? What will this church and this world look like because you were in it? For me, another piece of good news is that in my experience, to really make the right kind of difference, we don't have to be anybody but who we are. But the challenge is that we do have to be who we really are. What you have to give to the world doesn't have to be the smartest or the most unique or the most perfect thing that's ever come about. Chances are that's not the most hopeful thing at all. What we have to give to the world needs to be our real selves, in a way that alters people's lives. The former Unitarian minister, Ralph Waldo Emerson, knew a little bit of this when he talked to the graduates of Harvard Divinity School in 1838. And in part of his speech, he talked about bad preaching. So suspend your judgment on me until the end of the sermon and just listen to what Emerson has to say. He was saying that we can choose in this life to give something real of ourselves or some kind of false version of it. Here's a quote from what he had to say to the students. "I once heard a preacher who so sorely tempted me to say I would never go to church again. There was a snowstorm falling around us. The snow was real, the preacher merely spectral. If he had ever lived or acted, we were none the wiser for it. This man had plowed and planted, had eaten and drunken, he had bought and sold, read books. His heart throbs, his head aches. Yet there was not a hint in all his discourse he had ever lived at all. The true preacher can be known by this, that he deals out to the people his life, life passed through the fire of thought. It seemed strange that those people should come to church. It seemed like their houses were very unentertaining, that they should prefer this thoughtless clamor. So I think what Emerson had to say that day was not just a lesson for divinity school students, but a lesson for anybody who wants their life to matter to someone else. What we have to give and say to the world does not have to be flawless, and it will not be. But it does have to be real. My life, it's not always easy to feel like I've got the time or what I have to give is worth giving. Some of us here are just trying to get the basics of life in order. Pay the bills, clean the house, deal with our families, go to work, find a way of making a living that gets with our values. But in this place, there is something extraordinary going on. In this room right now, we have anxiety next to hope, aging and youth sitting side by side, fear and dreams all at the same time. Sometimes it's hard to believe that what we do in this life is sacred, and some other times it's just obvious. That's why I'm proud to be a part of our Unitarian Universalist tradition, because it said for hundreds of years that there is more truth to be found in our lives, that reality has been making itself known for eons and is still doing that, that the truth about religion in the world is not happening 2,000 years ago in some prophet or saint. What the world needs is here in you and me and this place. It's easy to be humbled by how big the world is. It's kind of easy to be humiliated by that too. I feel compelled to say this in almost every single sermon I give, and I think it's because it's so hard for me to believe. We are so much more than our jobs. We are so much more than where we live or who we voted for in the last election or what we're going to do tonight. All those things matter to us, but in the end, we are so much more. With all of what society is telling me and all this mental chatter happening in my head all the time, it's kind of hard for me to find that big self that I can present to the world. Last week, I read a passage from a book by the scientists Joel Premack and Nancy Abrams, and they offered me at least one source for thinking about that. Quote, "I can trace my lineage back 14 billion years through generations of stars. The atoms in my brain and body were created in stars, blown out into stellar winds and massive explosions. They soared for millions of years through space before becoming part of our new solar system. Intimately woven into me are billions of bits of information that took billions of years to be perfected. Billions of years of cosmic evolution have produced me." It's a good thing that I don't have to believe this, because I know it's true. Each of us has a very spectacular place from which we can speak, a very big self. As I said in the beginning of the sermon this morning, I have a lot more to learn from this congregation than I do to teach over the course of the summer. But I hope that we can begin together by asking these questions. What is it that this place says to the world? What is the one sermon of this place or of your life? What do you want with all your heart for your life to say to the world? And what's it saying right now? At a White House conference on aging in 1961, Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel said this, "There is no human being who does not carry a treasure in their soul, a memory of love, a deep insight, a call to excellence, or a dream of worship." So what's yours? My spiritual friends, each and every one of us has the chance, and a very brief one at that, to say something real to this world. No matter what it is, or no matter if we remain silent, something will be heard. The interesting thing about being in a free religious community is that we don't have one book or one prophet or one teacher who's going to do this without us. The future of a free faith and a free life like this is up to us. I don't have to tell you that the world is in trouble. But there are a lot of people suffering, and suffering in this room. We no longer have the privilege of letting our lives be silent to the world. We don't have the privilege of letting this church and what we bring to the world be anything less than prophetic. The term gospel means good news. But I have to tell you, I don't think good news is going to be enough. What we have to give to the world and what we have to give right now is great news. The news that there are no saints and sinners, no saved and damned. The good news that every single human being is holy and matters in this world. The good news that we need not think alike to love alike. The good news that we are amazing just as we are. But the call to worship in a Unitarian Universalist community is not that easy. It's not some sentimental view of, you're amazing, I'm amazing, let's sit here and believe that. The call to worship in a free religious community is the most radical re-envisioning of society we could possibly imagine. And it starts right now. And how we treat the people who walk into the doors of this church as if they were coming into our very homes. It starts especially in an election year when we're able to look at the people around us and see in them something sacred. It starts when we're able to see those who are different from us as our brothers and sisters. The call of this community is to give your life to the world. Your life passed through the fire of thought. It might be the simplest and most challenging thing any of us are ever asked to do. But I think it's exactly what we have to do if we want to see the beloved community on earth. Just like those languages that die every 14 days, something of our story is going to die with us. And what lives on, well, that's up to us. It's my hope that we have the courage to find the voice of our greatest hope in this world, that we are able to breathe our authentic selves into this place in our lives, and that when they read it, the language of our lives will sing songs of justice. May it be so. Amen.